obviously they're not new thoughts, because they're going to come from the New Testament. And they're and they may not be new thoughts to you either, but I know they're not thoughts that are normally taught by people who teach evangelism or practice evangelism. And it would help if some of you knew what I'd taught in evangelism in previous, some of you do, I think. I've taught about 6 hours on it here at different times. But this is not going to be what I've taught before. So if I did have, we've got those tapes available on the other 6 hours. And I think I have a catalog. I asked them to run off 50 copies yesterday, so I can bring it to your attention. 1 Corinthians chapter 9. Though I am free, or 9 verse 19. 1 Corinthians 9 verse 19. Though I am free and belong to no man. That's just an emphasized way of saying he's really free. I am free, I belong to no man. He then says, I make myself a slave to everyone. So, Doug was talking about slavery yesterday in terms of involuntary servitude. But here he is saying he is not under any involuntary servitude. He is involuntary servitude to everyone. He said, I make myself a slave. Nobody has made me a slave. I make myself a slave to everyone. Now he breaks that everyone down and to be specific. You say, how in the world can you be a slave to everyone? It'll be even more difficult as he describes it. Well, he tells us why he's made himself a slave to everyone, to win as many as possible. This is why I call it New Thoughts on Evangelism. Not because it's new, but because how many people today make themselves slaves to people to win them? Okay. And he said, I make myself a slave to everyone to win as many as possible. And he doesn't say I make myself a slave to everyone to win everyone, but if I do not make myself a slave to everyone, I have limited the possibility of how many will be saved. Now he breaks it down. Verse 20. To the Jews I became like a Jew. Why? To win the Jews. He's obviously speaking, he became like them culturally. We have an opposition view. If we wanted to win Mormons, would we become like a Mormon? No. Okay, if we wanted to win Muslims, would we become like a Muslim? Okay, do you think this is true? Now, on the mission field, overseas, we're more likely to do this. Because we know that we've got to learn the language and learn the culture of the people. We learn the language and the culture in every way short of compromise on basics. And so we don't actually compromise. In other words, you learn the culture, but in almost every world culture, the culture is wrapped up with some sort of paganism or idolatry. And the question is, how do I learn the culture and not get into the idolatry or the religious beliefs when everybody's religious beliefs affects their culture? But it is possible. And he's going to say it here. To those under the law, I became like one under the law. Now here's a case where he is saying that he didn't compromise. Because he says, though I myself am not under the law. In other words, he was not under the law, but he said, I became like one under the law. And he said, I still didn't compromise because I am not under the law. So culturally, he identified with the people without getting back under the legalism of the Old Testament. He'd been freed from that. So he made a division. He became like them, but not really like them, because he couldn't become really like them, because he was not under the law, he was under grace. Now he says, the opposite. You see, boy, this guy's going to be schizophrenic before it's over. It's because he says to those, oh, he tells us why. I became like one under the law, though I myself am not in law, so as to win those under the law. Verse 21, to those not having the law, I became like one not having the law. And then he says, though I'm not free from God's law. He didn't compromise there either. He was still going to be obeying the commandments of God and culturally identifying with those people who are not under the law. And he identified with those people under the law, but he didn't get himself back under the law because he couldn't be. He's under grace. We say we're under grace, we're going to obey God's law, so we're not going to get close to anybody who is not under grace or, you know, living in licentiousness, and we will win them from a distance, shouting at them over the FM radio if they tuned in. And he says, why? So as to win those not having the law. And he keeps rubbing this in. What he's doing and why he's doing it, and he's doing it without compromise, regardless which way he does it. And he does it in opposite directions. Now he says, to the weak I became weak. And we spend, not necessarily us, but we as a culture, spend all of our lives trying to keep from being weak. We even take self-assertive courses. Things to keep from, we don't want to identify with the weak. Why? To win the weak. And now he repeats in a different way. In the beginning he said, I make myself a slave to everyone, and he gave four examples. Now he says, I have become all things to all men, so that by all possible means I might save some. All things to all men, all means, all possible means, some of them might be saved. In other words, if there's going to be any limitation in the salvation of all people, it's not going to be because of this witness. Okay? If they, he later says, I'm innocent of the blood of all men. Now what he's referring to is a passage in Ezekiel, when I say to the wicked man, you shall surely die, and you do not warn that wicked man to turn from his wicked ways, he will die in his iniquity. But his blood I will require in your hand. And Paul said, I'm innocent. This is his plan, to the best of his knowledge, this is the way he did it. All things to all men, so that by all possible means I might save some. I do all this for the sake of the gospel, that I may share in his blessings. So he's not going to be a loser by doing this. I do this for the sake of the gospel, that I might share in its blessings. Most of us are culturally rigid. Is that true? If somebody is in a slightly different culture or background, we do not know how to identify with them. We do not know how to identify with them if they are lower class financially, lower class educationally, and different race. We do not know how to identify with them if they're higher class financially, higher class socially, and some other differences. We feel uncomfortable around the people. And if we are there, we don't know how to make them feel comfortable, if they're in the uncomfortable side. But people should be around us and know that we love them, not just because we say we do. I have just always considered myself in one of those rigid people. that down. But I knew it was wrong to be rigid. But I couldn't see myself growing my hair. why are you laughing, Neil? Okay. But here's the difference. I was willing to. And I became a Christian my second year at the Naval Academy here in 1947. So I had 3 years here as a Christian. Then I went 6 years in the Pacific Fleet. And then I came back here to work with the cadets and midshipmen until 68. So for 21 years, my contact were with people with short hair. All right? Then I moved to Ann Arbor, Michigan in 1968. And that was the wrong place to be looking for short hair. Now, if I were going to reach these people, I identify with the midshipmen, and I became like a midshipman to reach midshipmen. I became like a naval officer to reach naval officers. I had 21 years in this. Now, I was evangelistic within that culture. Not only was I evangelistic because I could identify with people in that culture, but I was also unwilling to identify with people in another culture. I didn't know I was unwilling. I thought I was because I was a Christian. And I found out I wasn't when these people with another culture came around. And it happened here on Maryland Avenue in probably 1958 or 1959. I'd opened that bookstore near the main gate of the Naval Academy in order to reach a midshipman from the Naval Academy. But little old ladies would come in wanting bookstores for their grandchildren. I wanted Bible story books for their grandchildren. And I didn't want to waste my time showing children's books to little old ladies because I was focused. Then something else happened. Other people came in the store. Everybody but midshipmen, because they were locked up. And one time, a fellow kept coming in, a black janitor at Bancroft Hall, and also he was a custodian at the hospital, custodian at Bancroft Hall and a orderly at the hospital. And he came in quite a few times, and he'd buy these 39-cent Moody Cole Portage books. They're paperback books. And sometime in there, I found out he was Roman Catholic. Well, there were several strikes against him if I was going to do this. Number one, he was black. Number two, he was a custodian. Number three, he was Roman Catholic. But he wanted to buy Christian books, so I'd sell him Christian books. And one day he said, "Mr. Wilson, I understand you start Bible studies." I said, "Yes, I do." He said, "I've got four or five guys who'd like to know how to study the Bible. Would you teach us how to study the Bible?" Well, you can't say no to that. Regardless of what your cultural rigidity is. So I said, "Sure." So I sat down with him, and I started giving him some instruction on inductive Bible study. I said, "I'll meet with you once or twice until you guys are knowing what you're doing, and then, you're on your own." I showed him how to study the Bible inductively at that little round table we had in the back, and I saw he wasn't paying any attention to what I said. And so I didn't know, I just didn't know, because I was uncomfortable, all this kind of stuff. And he said, "Mr. Wilson, do you know why we want to study the Bible?" I said, "No." He said, "We all want to know how to be born again." About that time, Bessie drove by, and I just waved her on. She came by to pick me up, and I waved her on, and he became a Christian. Now, here is the difference. I wanted to reach midshipmen. he reached many barbers and custodians for the Lord in Bancroft Hall. I didn't know it, but he had 2 years at Howard University. Also, he bought every intellectual book and commentary in the store, 2 copies of. One to have at Bancroft Hall and one to have at the hospital. He has, I'm sure, the biggest library here in this town. And I said, Frank, you don't need to spend your money on these books, sir. And because I thought he was maybe just doing it to have an impressive-looking library. Oh, he said, I read them. And not only that, but midshipmen started coming to the Lord because they had to sit in barber chairs. Okay, now, when you close your heart to one section of the population, you close your heart to the sector of the population that you want to reach. You cannot, if you violate this, even you are ineffective, less effective, with the culture you're already in. You've got to be wide open. Years before, when I was at graduate school at Monterey, California. And I went to the dentist, Navy dentist, and for some reason the dentist wasn't there, but the dental corpsman was there, the technician, enlisted man, and he was cleaning my teeth or something, and I started talking to him about God. And he said, well, let me, he was so interested, he said, come with me into the x-ray room. And so I went in the developing room, whatever they're doing, it was more primitive in those days, and so I kept talking to him about the Lord, and every time I went to the dentist, I'd get this fellow, and I'd talk to him about God. But I was talking to him as an officer to an enlisted man. And, you know, at this institution, they teach you not to have social relationships with enlisted men. You have other kinds of relationships. And I'd been, I'd take it in. That was the right thing in the Navy. Well, one day, I got a telephone call from him. He said, Mr. Wilson, I've got orders to Kodiak, Alaska. And could I come, or could my wife and I come over and see you? Well, I wasn't supposed to do that. I wasn't supposed to give hospitality to the men, but he asked. And so you're caught between your Christianity and your Navy culture. And I said, sure, come on over. Well, when he came over, I didn't know what to do with him. So we sat down there like stiff people, and I started talking about the weather, or, I don't know what it was. And he was probably 20, 21 years old, and his wife was probably 18, and they had a little baby with them. And finally, his wife said, Mr. Wilson, my husband tells me you talk about God. He had repeated everything I'd said and gone home. And I said, yes. And I was still stiff about this. And I started the Genesis and headed toward Revelation talking about God. And pretty soon, just like with Frank McGowan, I saw they weren't paying any attention. I said, here they have to come over. Here they want to talk about God. But I was so rigid. I wasn't alert to the Holy Spirit. I wasn't alert. And finally, the Holy Spirit just, I won't say spoke to me, I didn't hear it, but it was that clear. Wilson, shut up and let these people get saved. So I just stopped what I was doing. I said, would you like to become Christians? I remember they were sitting on the couch next to each other. They looked at each other, jumped off the couch, and got on their knees. Put the baby on the floor. Bessie came in, scooped up the baby, took the baby to the kitchen. And they were converted. Now, they were ready to be converted when they called me on the telephone. They wanted to come over and receive the Lord. And I talked about the weather and all of theology or, things like this. Well, those are two initial. Well, when I got to Ann Arbor, it was a different culture. There were long-haired University of Michigan people, SDS, Black Panthers, burned down Detroit, all kinds of. And I made a decision. Was I going to grow my hair, grow a beard, wear chains, And I was willing to. But then I realized that a lot of other people were doing that but it was a surface identification. It wasn't a heart identification. And I realized that if I had a heart identification, I didn't have to have the surface identification. They would see the phonies very quick. But if you love the people from the heart without this rigidity, you didn't have to change clothes every time you went to a different group of people. You could be a slave to everyone in the heart. Okay? And I'm saying this because I still feel rigid. Just because of my cultural background, education. But I have found out that people don't feel rigid with me. And I think it's because I made a choice. Leaving here yesterday, I picked up a hitchhiker. And he was black. Very friendly, got in, very thankful. Going back to work, he had to be up to the motor vehicle place to get his license. And you could tell, I said, what year did you graduate from Annapolis High? He said, 78. I said, oh, then you must be 30 years old. He said, no, 32. He said, I repeated a couple years. I said, oh, did you go to Adams Park? He said, yeah, I went to Adams Park. Well, that's when Heather was at Adams Park. And Gordon was at Adams Park. And we'd identified, and Heather was the only one of two white girls in the fifth grade and the only white girl in the sixth grade. And Gordon came home and said, Dad, there's only one other kid with a face like mine in kindergarten. So, well, very likely, I had handed tracts to this kid when he was in the third grade. Because I would walk to work at the bookstore down Genesee, down the back through Adams Park, down Clay Street, that way, and all the kids would be coming from Clay Street over to Adams Park, and I would, and they'd line up to get their track, because I'd be meeting all the traffic. And I had him, you know, hand tracts to him. And it could very well have been I handed a track to him 24 years ago, when he was in third grade. But the thing is, in the conversation that we had, just very warm, very friendly, and I knew that he didn't sense any difference. Now you say, but how do you do this? I don't want to pick up any black hitchhikers. Okay, but there are other people. Stretch yourself. Push it. And before you do, you pray and choose to love this person that you've never met before, whoever it is, wherever it is. I remember my brother, who is a pastor. When we were still in Annapolis, he was pastoring in New England. And he said, Jim, I'm a Christian. I'm supposed to love people all over the world. But he said, there are millions of people in Africa. I can't even picture millions of people. How do I love millions of people in Africa when I don't even know them? I said, love for people isn't dependent upon knowing people. If it were, you might not love them. If love is dependent upon the infinite amount of love that God has for you, through you, and you choose to love people. So you choose to love these million people in Africa, so if any one of them shows into your office, he can tell immediately whether you are antagonistic or cordial, or really love him because you've previously made the decision to love him. It has nothing to do with what he is. Okay, because of this choice, and the choice that I keep making, contrary to my rigid culture, people, and not just, but the people we work with regularly and teach this to, make these choices. And people know right from the first instant you meet them that you love them, and you don't have to be gushy. You don't have to be soupy to prove it or anything like that. You don't have to say you love them. They pick it up. They pick it up all kinds of ways, if you do love them. And you love them by making the choice. And these were, this was a volitional choice that Paul made. I make myself a slave to everyone. And he doesn't even know who everyone is. It wasn't conditional about, let me check to see what this everyone looks like or acts like. Unrelated to the everyone. It was just the fact that it was everyone because of that other objective to win as many as possible. All things to all men so that by all possible means I might save some. This is not a mechanic. This is not a little method of evangelism. This isn't what you say and what verses you memorize. This is a major basic principle. If Jesus Christ died for everyone, and his death for everyone was the greatest expression of love in the history of the world, and we are messengers of the message, if we are messengers of the message, but we do not have the love that the actual event was caused by, then the message is a sterile message. Because we cannot, if we go and show people, I'll go give the message to everybody in a sterile fashion. But they did get the message, and their blood is not on my hands. No. You choose to love them. And choice will do it. And there's no possible way you're going to fall in love with your enemy. So if you're waiting for the love to hit you, it isn't going to. It's a choice that you choose to make yourself a slave to everyone. That means available to him at his request. Now, I'm just sorry it took me such a long, painful time to learn this. I don't think I've learned it adequately. That's one of the reasons I like to teach it. Let's look over to the 10th chapter of 1 Corinthians, the end of the 10th chapter, verse 31. So whether you eat or drink, or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Do not cause anyone to stumble, whether Jews, Greeks, or the Church of God. You're probably already familiar with 1 Corinthians 8 and Romans 14, both of which it tells us, if you make your brother stumble, you'll eat no flesh, or Paul said, I'll eat no flesh while the world stands. Both of those are speaking of causing your brother to stumble. But this is an evangelistic passage, and he says, do not cause anyone to stumble, Jews, Greeks, or the Church of God. This isn't referring to brothers. This is, now when he says Jews and Greeks, he just... Well, in other cases, he was speaking in a first person, I will not eat any flesh while the world stands. Here it's an imperative. It's a command. It's not a suggestion. Do not cause anyone to stumble. Jews, these meant people who were not Christians. Greeks, this meant people who were not Christians. The Church of God, this meant Christians. Verse 33. Verse 32 was a commandment. Verse 33 is an example. Even as I try to please everybody in every way. Well, you say that'll get you going. One of the standard idioms in this country is you can't please everybody. You ever heard that? And which also means, so don't bother to try. Okay? And here he said, even as I try to please everybody, and this is the example to the commandment he's just given us. Do not cause anybody to stumble, Jews, Greeks, or the Church of God, even as I try to please everybody in every way. You say, boy, this just sounds, impossible. But what he's really saying is he is not trying to please himself. For I'm not seeking my own good, but the good of many. Why? So that they may be saved. So he gave a commandment first, do not cause anyone to stumble. That's a commandment. Jews, Greeks, or the Church of God. Then he gives an example how he goes about it. Tries to please everybody in every way because he is not seeking his own good, but the good of many, so that they may be saved. All of this has to do with the salvation of people. Now another imperative. Follow my example. As I follow the example of Christ. None of this is optional. One of the things I think I mentioned earlier, that we are all hold to the authority, the full inspiration of the scriptures, as long as it's shut. We will go to the mat and fight for the inspiration of the Word of God. But when it comes to obeying it, we want to have some other explanation. Now, the liberals are at least honest about it. They'll say, it's not true. But we say it's true. We say it's true, but we're not going to do it. And they'll say it's not true. This is a commandment. Do not cause anyone to stumble, and follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. And that would include what he says at the end of chapter 9, which is what he's doing. Though I am free and belong to no man, I make myself a slave to everyone. What we read earlier, verse 19. That's part of the example. Follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. Whereas the ultimate example is the person of Jesus Christ. Let's take this a little bit farther. Maybe I mentioned it yesterday. I've talked to private people on it. When we do this, you can even imagine doing it with a limited number of people. You probably can't imagine this much, but you can imagine getting stretched to some people. And you can also imagine how they're going to react. And your initial imagination is it's not going to be favorable. That somebody is going to take you to the cleaners or hurt you or tromp all over you or all kinds of things. Now he said, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. In addition to the commandments, is there any place else where we're told to follow the example of Christ? In 1 Peter 2, he is giving instructions to slaves in verse 18. Let's read it. Slaves, submit yourselves to your masters with all respect, not only to those who are good and considerate, but also to those who are harsh. For it is commendable if a man bears up under the pain of unjust suffering because he is conscious of God. But how is it to your credit if you receive a beating for doing wrong and endure it? But if you suffer for doing good and you endure it, this is commendable before God. Now this is speaking to slaves who are involuntary slaves, who don't want to be slaves, who are told to do everything. And he said, okay, you do it, and you submit yourselves to your masters with all respect. Not because the master is respectable. He says, even if he isn't. And then he says, 21, to this you were called, because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example, that you should follow in his steps. And then it tells us he committed no sin, no deceit was found in his mouth. When they hurled the insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. He said, Christ was an example. This happens to be the only only occurrence of this word in the New Testament, and I'm not sure of the word example. When they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate. And it goes on. Now, I want to use a word that people do not like, but it's the word vulnerable. Would you say that Christ made himself vulnerable? Did he tell us that we should be vulnerable? And now, since most of you are wives, you probably didn't connect chapter 3, verse 1 with what we just read, but it says, wives, in the same way. In the same way. What way? Just like Jesus Christ. You make yourself vulnerable. You say, if I make myself vulnerable, I'm going to be taken advantage of all over the place. Yeah, probably. Yeah, that's a possibility. And certainly it happened to Jesus. But the fact that it happened isn't the reason not to do it. What we're saying is, this is the way you win people. This is the way Jesus Christ won people. This is the way Jesus Christ won people through his death on the cross. He said, this is the way we're to win people. And Paul said, I make myself a slave to everyone, which is saying, I'm going to make myself vulnerable to everybody. But we want to protect ourselves and build a hedge around ourselves so that we will not get hurt. And Jesus is teaching us that we are to put ourselves in a position where we could possibly get hurt. But it wins people. I recognize it's hard to argue with Doug or me. Not because you couldn't, but people don't. And it's do you have any questions? Yes.
I have one, and it is sort of an argument.
Okay.
And it goes back to when you were talking about going to Ann Arbor, Michigan, and thinking that, you know, you needed to join their culture, grow your hair and stuff in order to have them identify with you. I'm very confused by that, because if we're called to be holy and separated from the world and following the commandments that are in here about appearance and bodily lusts and all that, then you do need to obey what's here and appear different so that people know that you're believing and adhering to what it is you've been commanded to do. I mean, if the change is really is real.
That's right. We're called to be separate from the world. As far as identifying the world, and that's what we read earlier, that Paul didn't compromise when he did the identifying. Paul identified without compromising. Now, and he says it both with the law and those not under the law. He meant those people who were moral and those people who were immoral. Those under the law were moral, legally moral, were separatists in that sense, Pharisee types. And those who are not under the law, who were probably licentious. But he said he's still under the law to Christ. So he never compromised on real obedience to God. So you identify without compromise. The problem with the church today, and probably the church then, is that we made things that were commands of God that really aren't here. And we make too strict a separation. Yes, we should be separate from the world. But he said, I want you to be in the world, but not of the world. And what we're saying, we don't want to be in it. We want to be so separate, we're not even in it. And we're to be in it and next to it. And what people are going to see is this vulnerability. What they're going to see is this love, is this identification, and they're going to want what we have. And our latching on to come out from among them and be separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing. Yeah, that's true, but we've gone ahead and identified what the unclean things were, different from what the Bible identifies as the unclean things. And that difference just keeps us out of effective evangelism like the Apostle Paul was in. Yes.
I guess partly because of my personality, the only reason I was here is really being lost always, really being taken advantage of, not learning anyone.
Well,
and the result of, you know, some people are really cruel and they're really...
That is true. Now, I recognize I'm talking to mostly women, and I think this is probably speaking mostly to men. But let's assume it isn't. But you're the kind of person it's speaking to otherwise. I mean, because you may be in extremely that way, but everybody's that way. Nobody wants to be walked on. Nobody wants to be tromped on, even very strong people. I mean, strong in personalities, and they're out walking on other people. They don't want to put themselves into a position where they might get possibly walked on. So it's not just someone with your personality who, you know, that really afraid that somebody would really take advantage of you. People the opposite personality. They would rather do the walking than get walked on, so they're not going to do it either. So we don't find anybody willing to make themselves a slave to someone, whether they're your personality or any kind of personality, because it means the other person is in control. And then he can do what he wants. And it might not be nice. But who really wins? We do. And he gets one to Christ. Because I can guarantee he won't get one to Christ the other way. Or a lot fewer will. We won't have anything to do with him. Now, I didn't grow my hair. But after we've been there a year or two, some of you have heard me tell this story. But I asked Bessie, I said, Bessie, what do you think of long hair? She said, I don't like it. Right. I said, all right. Neither do I. But I want to know, do you think it's immoral? Do you think it's unbiblical? And she said, no, I don't think it is. She said, I know the text well. 1 Corinthians 11, and if it is, my hair is too short. And so is yours. Okay? And I cannot have it both ways. And she said, it's a matter of taste. I don't like long hair. I said, but you don't think it's wrong? She said, no, I don't think it's wrong. I said, well, I don't like it, but I don't think it's wrong. So let's call the boys in and tell them they can grow their hair. And they never asked to. And I'd cut their hair all the time they were here, and you know how I cut it, right over the top. I wasn't a hairdresser of any kind of good for swimming. And they grew their hair, and they were not rebellious because it was our idea. They were probably the only two kids in the church who did not rebel. When they got old enough, they went in the Navy, and guess what happened to their hair? We've never lost our kids because we did the identifying first. Now, I don't know, maybe I'd feel different if they were going to mohawk it and bleach it and orange it. I'm still sort of rigid, but considering what my background is, that was the smartest, wisest decision we ever made. Now, I told you what my background was as far as the Naval Academy and the Navy for 20, and working with people like this for 20 some years. My wife's background was Prairie Bible Institute. Prairie Bible Institute is a little Bible college in Three Hills, Alberta, Canada, that puts out more missionaries per square foot than any other school in the world. You'd recognize names. You'd probably recognize Don Richardson or, from Prairie. Many missionaries. But when she was in school, the boys sat on this side of the classroom and the girls sat on this side of the classroom. And the girls had to have sleeves at least this long, and regardless what the style was, skirts that were probably no more than 11 inches from the floor, and that's the way they were. And they came into class one time, and the boys had placed a poster on the girls' side of the room called "The Promised Land." But nevertheless, what I'm talking about, when it comes to separation from the world, Prairie did it in spades. You know? And there are things you didn't do. So when it comes to those kinds of things, Bessie and I could sign the longest list of don'ts in any fundamentalist church in the country. But we wouldn't. And we wouldn't join such a church that required it. Because of this. And we found out that we could love people and reach people without conforming. You know, people are rigid, and you know, I'm talking to this group, maybe when you were growing up, you wondered why older ladies wore real bright lipstick. And the reason they wore it is because that's what they wore when they were 16. And people don't change. But there came a time, but Bessie was in that age group. You know, she's now 71. And she never wore any. And one of the reasons we're married is because I didn't want it. But anyhow, she could reach people all this time when everybody else was quite the opposite as far as makeup is concerned. And, you know, she didn't have to identify that way. But then there came a time in the 60s and 70s when nobody wore it. Or at least all the young people. We've been working with young people, and Bessie was right with them. I'm sure they thought she had identified with them. Because all the other older women wore it. They didn't change. But anyhow, we're all sort of inflexible, but we don't have to be inflexible heart-wise. Yeah, yeah. And you'll see older men with flat tops, crew cuts, gray-haired flat tops. Why? Because that's what they wore in the Second World War. People don't change. And early in the century, we find out that all old men had beards. Why did old men have beards? Because that's what they grew out when they were 20. Because after the Civil War, people had beards. At the turn of the century, young men had mustaches. And 40 years later, they had the same mustache. So people don't change. We are all inflexible. But we're told to be flexible. Now, if you cannot be flexible in your dress or your, you know, you can be flexible in your heart, you can be flexible in your willingness. Because it means the salvation of people. Let's thank God. Thank you, Father, for this time together. In Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen.